You are listening to Prometheus by Minute. I'm your host, Courtney Coulson. This is Minute 8. This minute opens with Holloway saying that the constellation in the painting is the same configuration as the others, and ends with a partial reveal of the Prometheus. First of all, I am a bad friend and did not credit Steph Cullingford for her help with the historical information. I think discussing and debating the historical and scientific inaccuracies in fiction is basically the foundation of our relationship. She had a few interesting things to add that I didn't consider. Firstly, as mentioned previously, it seems the date was just arbitrary. Making the cave painting 35,000 years old does not serve the story in any way. What might have been cool is if they had included the Warren Field calendar. It is the oldest calendar ever discovered, a lunar calendar to be precise, and it dates back to 8000 BCE in Scotland. Thing is though, while it was excavated in 2004, it wasn't made public until 2013. So it would have been impossible, as Prometheus was released in 2012. Makes you wonder what other scientific discoveries are out there that haven't been published yet. A similar thing happened with Jurassic Park. Why do I keep referencing that movie? Real velociraptors are basically teeny, brightly colored chickens. So naturally, the movie had to make them bigger and scarier. Thing is, just before they started production on the film, paleontologists discovered the Utah raptor, discovered in Utah, of course, which resembles the Jurassic Park raptors as closely as possible, though they probably had feathers. So that's just another example of life imitating art, I suppose. Zeta Reticuli was also another arbitrary choice, but as Steph pointed out, why not make it Pleiades? It's already home to aliens and ufology. It's also known as the Seven Sisters, a constellation that is documented in many cultures across the globe, from the ancient Greeks to Native Americans to the Australian Aborigines. You want a culture-transcending constellation? Pleiades is your prime choice. We also don't know if there are any planets there for certain, though it is possible, again, giving you more wiggle room creatively. All that said, I guess I can't fault Prometheus specifically. LV-426, the planet in Alien, was in the Zeta Reticuli system, so they were kind of stuck with that choice. Then again, why did LV-223 have to be set in the same place anyway? Was it a red herring to make us think that the events of Prometheus would tie directly into the events of Alien? Although that may have been the initial idea, but things have gone in a radically different direction since then. Side note, I wonder how much of this prequel trilogy was planned in advance between Prometheus and Covenant. How much did they know about what would happen? Because, I mean, there are certainly seeds there, but... Well, I was surprised where it went. You would think it would be a simple fact that these films take place in Zeta Reticuli, but when I did more research, the truth was a bit more complicated than that. While it seems to be canon now, in Alien, when they approached LV-426, Lambert says,
I found it. Just short of Zeta 2 Reticuli. Registration. Haven't reached the outer rim yet.
Calling Antarctica traffic.
How are we doing
out
here?
I don't even know what they mean by Zeta 2. Are they closer to one of the stars than the other? Yet another detail probably not intended for close analysis, but here we are. I suppose back in the pre-internet age, screenwriters could get away with just throwing any old jargon into a sci-fi script because it sounded spacey or futuristic, and now you've got jerks like me being a killjoy and thinking too hard about it. You're welcome.
I think they want us to come and find them.
Yeah, this is clearly an invitation. The engineers wanted us to know where to meet them when we were sufficiently advanced. How else could you possibly interpret these images? This implies that we were supposed to become technologically advanced, and that, if anything, we did follow our intended path. What happened? Did we exceed expectations? Did the atom bomb scare them off? Here's where the script departs quite a bit, so enjoy what is effectively a deleted scene where Holloway and Shaw propose the mission to Weyland on his space station. Exterior, Weyland's wheel, Earth orbit. A gleaming space station, like a five-spoked wheel, rotates grandly against the Pacific Ocean, 1,000 miles below. Black letters on the white wheel read, Weyland's wheel. A round shuttlecraft approaches the station. Interior, shuttlecraft, zero gravity. A spacecraft no bigger than a private jet. Holloway and Watts sit strapped into acceleration chairs, the only two passengers aboard. New to space travel, Watts tears her eyes away from the spectacle of Earth outside the window. Holloway plays with a pen, batting it from hand to hand in zero gravity. What's first? You do climate, I do genetics? Archaeology first. Let our ancestors tell the tale. You think he's serious?
Serious enough to send his private shuttle.
Whalen can send his shuttle out for pizza. Martin, if this meeting goes like the others, maybe we should...
It won't go like the others.
How do you know? Holloway plucks the pen from the air. He points out the window where the crescent moon shines like a toothy grin. Heaven smiles on her enterprise. Exterior, Whalen's wheel. The shuttle docks with the wheel's hub, a perfect fit. Interior, Whalen's wheel. Spoke elevator, zero gravity. A gleaming capsule elevator with windows to the stars. Holloway and Watts float weightlessly inside, moving from handhold to handhold. The door closes. Watts grabs Holloway by the collar, pulls them roughly together. They kiss, not for the first time. They have a way. Watts' hair and clothing float free. She is a naiad in Holloway's arms. For fuck's sake. Anyway, okay. Exterior, Whalen's wheel. The elevator descends along the spoke to the rim. Interior, Whalen's wheel. Rim, foyer. A luxurious lobby. Tasteful lighting. Eames-era furniture. Gross. In wood and chrome. The past vision of the future. At the rim, the wheel's rotation supplies gravity. That's scientifically plausible. An elevator door opens. Watts and Holloway step out. Holloway with a sleek metal folio slung under his shoulder. The floor is the outer surface of the wheel. In both directions, it curves upward out of sight. The walls are all windows. On one side, Earth rotates lazily. On the other, a wheeling field of stars. David, an android, stands waiting for them. He's cunningly built, but no one would mistake him for a real human being.
Professor Holloway, Dr. Watts, my name is David.
Hello, David.
Mr. Whalen's eager to meet you.
He strides off across the foyer. Watts and Holloway exchange a wondering glance and follow. Exhibit Hall. David leads past models of planets, moons, and asteroids. Holographic labels and data whirl around them.
These are all the planetary bodies on which Whalen Industries has mining claims.
The end of the hall is dominated by a huge globe of Mars. Markings indicate widespread surface activity.
And Mars, Whalen's crown jewel.
How's that going, the terraforming?
They say you're getting diminishing returns. It's not working.
It is the greatest engineering project ever attempted. Challenges are inevitable. Mr. Whalen's a determined man.
Whalen's office. Peter Whalen sits behind a mahogany desk. He's a Warren Buffett type, a country sage, horse sense and hard knocks. He might be 70 years old or 170. Behind him stands director Lydia Vickers, a slim woman of 45 in a costly business suit, shrewd and watchful. Once a great beauty, she now trades in ruthlessness.
Yes, because 45-year-old women are all hags.
I'm sorry, guys. I try and read these scripts without interjecting, but... Oh. Anyway.
David stands against the wall. Watts and Holloway settle into chairs in front of Wayland. Holloway holds the metal folio.
Professor Holloway, Miss Watts.
Dr. Watts.
Forgive me. Peter Wayland.
He notices Watts looking curiously at David. He smiles.
Ah, David here's a prototype. Our 80 series. One of a kind for now, but if he performs, he will be legion. What do you want here?
Holloway looks at him, startled.
We sent you a prospectus that... Assume I know nothing.
Holloway swallows, lays the metal folio on Wayland's desk.
I'm an archaeologist.
He touches a tiny remote. Holographs appear in the air over Wayland's desk. The folio is a three-dimensional imager. Pictures of a younger Holloway in the field, excavating ruins in Egypt, China, Peru, Greece. In my studies, I discovered a pattern I couldn't explain. Every 1100 years, sudden advances in agriculture, tool use, technology, invention, something caused a great leap forward every 11 centuries. The pattern holds as far back as our data goes. Tens of thousands of years, I
had to understand this. It became the focus of my work. Wayland nods. Holloway glances at Watts and forges on. Dr. Watts was a student of mine. Watts touches her own remote. The holographic display turns to scientific diagrams, images of a very young and beautiful Watts in the laboratory. I was analyzing historical changes in human DNA. I found the same pattern. Every 11 centuries, a pulse of new information in the genome of the human race, all over the world. Evolution can't do that. Something was changing us, changing the DNA of our species.
Humanity's been visited. Visited by beings from somewhere else.
Behind Wayland, Vickers can't suppress a scowl of disdain.
You mean aliens?
A beat. The others had forgotten Vickers was there, because she's a 45-year-old woman, and she's invisible to society. Her beauty has faded, you see.
Lydia Vickers, Director of Operations, practically my right hand.
Well, they guided us to civilization, lifted us up, again and again. I call them engineers.
Once you know what you're looking for, it's amazing how the evidence falls into place.
Photographs flicker through the display, Holloway and Watts in the field, excavating new sites, intimately close. Their finds, columns of writing on stone tablets in Egypt, China, Cambodia, Peru, patterns of lines, curves and dots. This is the writing of the engineers. We found it on every continent, and last year, we found our Rosetta Stone. The display shows the engineer obelisk under the sea. The writing is a formula, giving the location of a single star in our sky.
Which star?
We're keeping that confidential for now, but that's where we want to go.
You want me to pay for an interstellar research expedition?
It's a chance to be part of a revolution in scientific...
Don't sell me, Professor. You've been turned down by every university and government agency under the sun. Nobody's going to gamble that kind of money on your hunch.
Holloway deflates. Watts winces. This is a bloodbath.
Nobody but me, he grins. I've read your research.
That's impossible. Our research is quantum encoded on secure servers, yeah. We have an AI division, you should know, doing impressive things.
He leans across the desk.
I know which star you're wishing on.
He seems like he was going to be American initially, just by the way he talks and the way he's described.
The scientists stare at Wayland.
You're bluffing. Zeta 2 Reticuli.
He regards their shocked faces with satisfaction.
You know how I got this rich? I ask myself, what does God spend his time doing? And I go and do that.
Watts laughs incredulously, stifles it. Wayland's not joking.
Biotechnology was good to me. Fusion power. Lately doing well with gravity systems.
He swivels his chair towards the window. Earth shines outside.
But what's the first thing God did?
He made the heaven and the earth. Wayland jabs a finger at her like she's won a carnival prize.
That's what I'm talking about. You left out my favorite part. The piece about Earth. David?
For eons, Earth's climate swung from hothouse to ice age. Explosions of life, then mass extinctions. But 12,000 years ago, the swing stopped. The Holocene epoch began. A period of anomalous tranquility. The rise of civilization began only then. Holloway and Watts stare at David with new appreciation.
That's right.
And the change coincided with a visit by the engineers. They didn't just change us, they changed their world. That's the piece I mean. Engineering Earth. God stuff.
He swivels back to his chair.
Rummages in a drawer.
My people checked your science. They say it's solid.
He pulls a thick contract out. Drops it in front of Holloway.
I'll give you your expedition. Ship and crew. Supplies, support. One condition.
Holloway picks up the contract with the cautious joy of a man double-checking a lottery ticket. His voice is husky.
What's that? You get the discovery. Control of the site. But any technology you find, anything at all, that's mine.
Holloway reaches out slowly and picks up the contract. Rifles the pages of small print legalese.
You take David with you, my eyes and ears. And Vickers. You're going too.
Vickers stares at Wayland in shock. Like the scene I read in the previous minute, this one was likely cut due to budgetary constraints. Both scenes would have been expensive and elaborate, but ultimately unnecessary. We get all this information when the crew wakes up. It's more efficient in the final version. From the line, "I think they want us to come and find them," we cut straight to a shot of a tiny Prometheus racing through the vastness of space. It's elegant. When we see such a tiny speck of a ship, I wonder how they animate that. Do they have to use the full model, or are we really just looking at a white, blurry speck? As we see, it's explained that the engineers return to Earth every 1,000 years to update their creations. This would have clarified why humans are so genetically close to the engineers, whilst our earthly cousins, such as other primate species, would have taken another evolutionary path. Essentially, what makes the human race so unique amongst Earth life is merely a helping hand. In the last second of this minute in the audio mix, there's a little robotic sound. It sounds a bit like a Star Wars droid. I wonder what that's supposed to be. Radio signals? I mean, I know they're trying to communicate with LV-223. I know satellites do the same thing. I'm curious about what that is. Is that just radio signals? So, the previous scene was 2089, and this is 2093. Okay, we have a justification for the hair changes with Shaw. I know, I'm obsessed with that bloody wig. If you include the viral marketing stuff, you run into some continuity problems, because her hair is long and dark, without a fringe in the Quiet Eye video. By the way, the dialogue for that video is from a scene in Lindelof's script, where she is sending a message to Wayland from the dig site. The script describes her as dirty, but sexily so. I don't read a lot of scripts, but I hope they aren't all this disgustingly misogynistic. I have no other words for it. It's disgusting. Lecherous, even. There you go, there's another word. Lecherous. I know people have scoured all the viral marketing materials analysing the information they present, but all the marketing is handled by a different department. It's not meant to be canon, or at least I don't think so. There's just far too many contradictions there. Like how there are two blonde Davids in the David commercial when we know our David does that to be unique. Unless they all love Lawrence of Arabia, and they're all doing that to be unique, but they're all programmed to do that same. Wow, that. I will get into David's uniqueness and synthetics in general in this society in future episodes, of course. Though, I will say, it is interesting that David is so primitive in this script. I mean, it makes sense. He is the first of his kind. Would they have used uncanny makeup and effects on a real actor? I mean, this movie is all about practical over digital, so yeah, maybe. I'm curious to know how that would have been actualized on screen. I'm also wondering how the other characters treat him in this script. In the film, people are quite blasé about an android. They must be quite commonplace by 2093. Whereas Watts and Holloway are quite fascinated by David. Either way, the result is the same. Humans won't trust him or respect him. If he's something new, there's wariness of the unfamiliar. If androids are commonplace, they won't treat him with respect because he's an appliance with a face. I try not to watch the film or read too far ahead in the script and just focus on the minute at hand so I can sort of react in real time to the information, even though I've seen this movie dozens of times before. When you watch a film on this scale, I suppose you could say, you're watching it in a totally different way, and it's hard to keep all the facts of the plot in your head at once, because normally when you watch a film, information's revealed to you in a matter of minutes, whereas I'm watching 2 minutes a week. So, you know, I've got these questions and it's like, oh wait, 5 minutes later that's answered, which is weeks later for me. I think Prometheus is a unique production in that there are so many paths explored. There are two early scripts available to read. There's a wealth of interviews, commentaries, concept art, featurettes, and viral marketing, and so much more. I think it's rare for a production to have that much creative freedom. And while it is a prequel to Alien, they could go pretty much anywhere, and the early concepts and scripts demonstrate that. I think it's those possibilities that I find most intriguing. Speaking of, apparently they were originally going to have this dig site on Mars, but they decided against it because, obviously, if you find something like that on Mars, the obelisk, it's damn near irrefutable proof of aliens. Why would you doubt that? So, yeah, an element of doubt was needed for this mission, I think. Alright, that about covers it. This is Coulson, signing off. You can find me on TravianDesigns.com, TRAVIAN, or Prometheus by Minute on Facebook.